would you like to profit from property developments? Brandon Kopp will tell us how to do this. And what's so special about Brandon is he's a real estate investment consultant, fund manager, and land development coach, as well as the owner of the Land Development Accelerator, a mastermind program that teaches students how to turn rural land into new housing communities by guiding them through land entitlement, development, and new construction. So, Brandon, tell us about how can property investors profit from property developments.
Property Wealth Strategies podcast with Lily Patrashku shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Yeah, well, first off, it's great to be here with you. Thanks for having me on the show. The interesting thing about development, I would say, is you have multiple exit strategies and multiple chances to force appreciate the value of the property. Whereas with other real estate niches, you're kind of pigeonholed into one exit strategy. You know, if you're doing multifamily, it's all about the NOI, and you know, that's kind of it. You know, you've got a few different force appreciation plays you can do by getting the expenses down or getting the rents up by renovating it. Or, you know, if you're flipping houses, you kind of got a few plays where it's mostly to renovate it and sell it. With land, you've got three different phases of development, and not a lot of people realize there's three. There's the entitlement process, which is where we just get a piece of land approved for a new community. So from farmland to approved home community. That creates a lot of value. You can profit there. You can actually do the development if you want. This is where you're grading the land out, or you're putting the utilities, the sewer and water into the land and selling the ready to build lots. So you can force appreciate the value there, or you can take it all the way through and do the third phase of development, which is actually build the homes. And that's usually where you create into the most value there. So you got multiple chances to force appreciate the value and profit.
Thank you. So take us through some of your case studies of either some land development deals that you did or some of your students, and how did that go through?
Yeah, so we did a deal where it was one of our smaller projects. We did a 43 townhome project with the city. It started where we were like, oh, you know, we're going to be able to get 50, 55 units on it. And then after doing some work and back and forth in civil drawings, we're like, we settled on 44 units, and then we lost one where it was 43 units. But we ended up buying that property, putting it under contract for $900,000. So we put it under contract. We did not buy it. And we got all the approvals for the 43 townhome project on the piece of land. And once we got those approvals, 60 days later, we did a double close where we literally walked into one room and we bought it from the seller. And then we walked into another room and we sold it to the buyer. And we sold it for a little over $1.6 million. We put about $80,000 into the property and civil engineering and stuff like that studies. So, you know, it wasn't bad. We're all in for about $980,000. We sold it for a little bit over $1.6 million. And we didn't have to do any construction or stick a shovel in the ground. We didn't have to go and actually buy the property. You know, we used a lender to use bridge funding for the double close. So that would be an example of like a land entitlement project and, you know, how much money you can make on a smaller project. And then, of course, you know, we've got bigger projects where we actually do the development, and I'm happy to go into those too if you want.
Yes, please.
So we're selling a 74 home community right now. We are in the middle, like we're literally just a few, like a month, like probably a month out from our first closing on it. So we just finished it up and we are all in on that project. I want to say it's right around $63,000 a unit. So I'm trying to do 63,000 times 74 units in my head, and I can't do the math, but you got about what that number is. But we're under contract for $7.4 million to buy, or roughly about $97,000 per unit is what it is. So we're all in for 63 per unit. We're selling it for 97. So there's a profit spread there of, I don't know, what is that? $35,000 times 74. So you can give or take a little bit, but, and then the investors are going to get paid on the deal as well. So, it's going to be a seven-figure profit by the time we're done with everything.
Thank you. Are you saying that someone could potentially not even buy the land yet, but have it like some sort of delayed completion contract with the seller of the land? and get all the different approvals for that particular land without even owning it? Is that even possible?
Yeah, that's land entitlement. That's what we teach how to do.
Okay.
The development, no. If you're going to develop it and all that, you know, you got to own it, obviously. But yeah, that first phase, if you just take a piece of agricultural land and get it approved for a 100 home community, you can sell it and, you know, you can make seven figures on that deal without ever owning it.
And then if you're planning to actually also build on it, how do you get people to pre-sell if, let's say, you don't own it yet?
Let's say I don't own what, the land yet, or
yes.
What are you talking about?
Yes. Yeah. Let's say you own the land yet. Yes. Like you do the contract in that same way that you discussed.
Each phase has to be done consecutively. So we have an entity that just does land entitlement and it will sell it to buyers that want to buy it. Well, we might be the buyer of that. So in that case, if we're moving on to phase two, which is where we do the grading, install the roads, put the sewer in the ground. We basically make a neighborhood with no homes on it. And we're making ready to build lots that builders can put homes on or we can put homes on. So the land entitlement company will sell the approved plan to our syndication that we raise capital for. And that syndication will then do the development. So you ask, how do we go about pre-selling these things? Well, traditionally, we've never pre-sold, honestly. We have always just done speculative new construction builds. Now, I'm not saying that's the right way and everyone needs to decide what's best for them. But if you wanted to pre-sell the homes, you first have to have that empty community. And you would do this via your sales team. So, you know, like we hire real estate agents, post it on the MLS, ready to build lot. And then the homeowners can come, drive the neighborhood, pick their lot out that they want. And then they can make a decision to put a deposit down, get the financing, you know, for us to build the home or, you know, however you want to do it. But the first thing before you can pre-sell anything is they need to see what the development's going to look like. And you have to get it to that stage first.
Thank you. What initially attracted you to land development instead of traditional real estate investing?
You know, it was something that was a journey. When I started 10 years ago, if you told me that we'd be inventing these new housing neighborhoods, I'd have looked at you like you had seven heads. We started flipping houses and we were doing about 30, 40 homes a year. And then we got into building houses. So the light bulb moment for us went off is when we had a property that we were rehabbing and around the whole corner, the neighbor's like, hey, you know, my neighbor's house caught fire. Do you want to buy it? They want to sell. And we said, sure. We met with them. And the whole second floor was crispy. Foundation in that first floor looked pretty good. And we knew it was a deal because we could buy the land for less than what the property was worth. We're like, well, all we got to do is scrape it and sell it and we can make money. So there's got to be value in this. Well, we had done these full gut rehabs where we gutted everything down to the studs and like redid it. And so new construction wasn't all that scary. We said, well, you know, it's got half the framing. Let's just hire a structural engineer, make sure we're safe, get the city involved and, you know, reframe up and sell the home. We ended up making three times the amount of money on that new build as we did on our rehabs. And we said, why are we rehabbing houses? Like, let's just do new builds. It's not that much more than what we're doing. So we'd kind of worked our way up to getting comfortable to do a new build. We started doing tons of new builds. We started HBG Capital, which is our investor facing arm that raises the capital for our deals. And we started doing all these onesie twosie little new builds everywhere. So tear down the house, build two. These are in existing neighborhoods. And we scaled that business to doing, you know, 30 homes a year. And then we said, well, gosh, you know, we're at a crossroads. We can either continue going after these onesie twosie little new builds everywhere, which is, you know, you're all over town, you're spread out, and, you know, you're having to do different homes to fit the lot. Or we could just go after parcels of land and do 30, 40, 50, 100 homes. We like that idea. So the light bulb moment is when we realize it takes just as much time and effort to talk to one person that owns a piece of land that you can put one or two houses on as it does to talk to somebody who owns a piece of land that you can put 30, 40, 50, 100, 200 plus homes on. So we pivoted and we started going after those opportunities. Well, when we were developing, not building houses yet, I used the word develop, like getting it approved and doing the horizontal development, we started getting these knocks on the door from these big national home builders. And they said, hey, we really like your development. Like, how about you guys don't build the houses? How about we build the houses? Y'all in for that? Would that work? And we said, no, sorry, get lost. Well, then they came back with a contract and a purchase agreement and said, hey, we really want to buy this. Here's what we're willing to offer you. And we looked at the contract. My partner and I looked at each other, looked at the contract, looked at each other, looked at the contract and said, it's for sale. You can have it. And do you want the one across the street too? Because like we'll develop and sell that to you as well. So we came into the land development business as builders looking to scale the number of homes that we were building. And, you know, I'll be honest, you know, we sold off our last batch of homes in 2024. We haven't built since because the market's been pretty crappy. But these national home builders have just continued to buy the land from us. So right now, for the foreseeable future, they've got a check with an unlimited amount of money that they can use to buy as much land from us as possible.
Thank you. Why would you say these national builders are coming to you to kind of buy the land from you?
I would say like they're coming to us. In that scenario, I explained they found us. They actually did come to us in that scenario because they saw what we were doing in the area. But we get something and we bring it to them, right? So we have our list of our buyers list. It's, you know, it's a buyer's list, right? And they're all the sales reps and VP of land for all these national home builders. And we know what they want. They've explained their buy box and we just reverse engineer what they want and give it to them. That's really it. That's all there is to it. I'm not doing anything crazy. I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel. And so all we do is we get the land under contract. We get a concept plan done. Concept plan is just a two-dimensional, hey, here's how many homes we think we can get on it. A civil engineer does that for us. We take that concept plan to the city and we say, hey, look at what we got. Would you like this? Would this add value to your community? If they go, heck yeah, like we want this, we take it to our list of national home builders. And if they say, yes, we want to buy this, here's a deposit and a contract, then we start taking it through the approval process. And we do all that during our due diligence period so we don't have money at risk.
Thank you. Why do you choose to build on some land and why do you choose to sell it to these national home builders sometimes?
Yeah. So like I said, we haven't built anything since the late 2024 was the last bit of homes that we sold off. And the reason was the market was just crappy. Like, you know, inventories were up, supply was up, absorption rates weren't good. You know, it's been a pretty tough market since the black swan interest rate rise. So, you know, we're just paying attention to where the opportunity is right now. We don't think that the best risk reward opportunity is in building and selling speculative homes. We think it is selling entitled pre-sold land or developable pre-sold land to these national home builders.
Thank you. What are the 10 commandments or most important pillars for someone to profit from land entitlements? What would they need to do? What kind of criteria do you have?
Yeah, so it's a good question. There's quite a bit, right? There's quite a bit of gotchas, but I'll tell you some of the most common mistakes that we see, and we've made these mistakes. Mistake number one is they don't design the community with the end buyer in mind. So the typical new developer who's getting in this game, I get at least one of these concept plans a month from someone who gets something approved and they're trying to sell it and they realize they're not going to be able to. You know, for example, I get usually somebody that is sending me, it's usually a townhome plat because people want townhomes because you can get more density. Way more density equals more money. But more density doesn't always equal more money. So what do I mean by that? What I mean is I had somebody send me a concept plan one time that had these 11-foot wide townhomes. And I looked at it and I was like, who has an 11-foot wide townhome product? That doesn't exist. You know, most of the buyers, you know, they've got a 20, 22-foot, 24-foot wide townhome product. And I know what he did. He just tried to shove as much density as possible on it, trying to make as much money. And as a result, he lost about half his density in order to sell it. And I, you know, I hope he made money, but he might not have. So that's rule number one is you need to design it with the end buyer in mind. Rule number two is you've got to make sure that with whatever you're doing, you have the right product fit. So, for example, we had a community that we bought for 40 units and we're going to develop it. And we go to our list of national buyers and they were like, dude, we don't have anything here that's going to work. I was like, well, what do you mean you don't have anything that's going to work? He's like, this particular area just is not set up for this product and it's going to be too skinny. And so we actually had to go back and completely redo the entire concept to make sure that this product was able to fit on it. And we lost some lots because of that. So you want to make sure that you've got something that is going to be good for the type of product that the person is going to be building in that area. The third biggest mistake I see is buying the land before you get the approvals. So don't ever do that. You don't have any guarantees that the city is going to approve what you want. So put it under contract contingent on getting the result that you want, and don't put any of your money at risk. You want to make sure that you have the ability to buy it once you have all your approvals in place. And if you don't get the approvals, you can get your earnest money back. I'd say those are the three biggest mistakes that I see people make.
Thank you. What kind of opportunities should investors look for when evaluating rural land?
You know, it depends on your exit strategy and your niche. So everything we teach in our mastermind community and coaching program, the process is the same. So I don't care if you're doing multifamily or you're trying to get 100 homes approved or a self-storage unit or industrial, the process to get that piece of land approved for whatever real estate you want to put on it is the same. So it does not matter what you're trying to do. You can do it. It just needs to make sure that, you know, a piece of land that's for industrial might not be the best fit for something that is, I don't know, a community or multifamily unit, right? So that's where it comes down to like the highest and best use of the land. So you just want to make sure that whatever exit strategy you're doing with it is going to actually work for you, or in this case, work with your end buyer. It really works if you are the end buyer or you know the end buyer. Like, that's all you're doing is you're just reverse engineering it. But I don't know, I kind of went off on a tangent. Did that answer your question?
Yes. How do you identify land that has strong development potential?
So kind of going back to what we just said. So you've got different buyers. So I'm going to use our national home builders, for example. Our national builders, if I type in Lennar, or I type in DR Horton Neighborhoods, Nashville, Tennessee, I'm going to get a link, and I click that link, and what pops up is a big map with all of their communities on there. So I already know the areas that they want to build in. So I'm not reinventing the wheel. I'm just going to the areas that they already have communities in, and this is what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the large puzzle pieces among all the smaller puzzle pieces. What the heck is that, Brandon? Every county has a GIS map or a parcel viewer map. You can go type this in, it's free. And all it does is it shows all the different parcels of land all together. And it fits together like a nice, neat puzzle. And you'll see the areas that have developed, these neighborhoods, there's a bunch of tiny little puzzle pieces. These are like the homes, the little lots that people own and their house has been built on. And next to them, you'll see these big swaths of land usually. And it doesn't have to be connecting right to it, but it does need to be like around it, you know, down the road. And so I'm looking for the big puzzle pieces that are near or around all the smaller little high density puzzle pieces. The reason is if I have these high density puzzle pieces, these smaller lots where there's lots of lots in a little area development, that means that there's probably sewer access. And in order to get higher density on the piece of land that I need to have sewer access. If you don't have sewer access, that means you're going to have to put a septic system on there or a step system. And those requires a larger amount of land for that septic system, right? Your waste needs more. If the waste is not going to go in a sewer, it's going to go spread out among your land. The land has to be a lot larger. So you can still do that. It works. The reason or your solution to that is just look and see if the national home builders or other builders in the area are actually building homes with septic systems. If they are, you're in luck. It means that it will work and you can do that strategy. If you don't see any other homes being built with septic systems, well, you're kind of out of luck and you need to stick to something that has sewer access. So I'm going to the areas where the builder's already building. I'm looking for the big puzzle piece, land pieces among all the smaller puzzle pieces. And then I'm looking for sewer access. So you can drive the road and you can see those little manholes on your Google Maps, or you can send an email to your local utility department and say, hey, I'm looking at this parcel of land. Here's the address. I need the sewer maps. And they will send you a map showing where the sewers are in the area and if you have access. So that's the big thing right there. And there's a couple things like the topography of the land. you know, I don't want to build something on a mountain, right? You know, something crazy or something that's just a straight drop off. So you got to have a little bit of training when it comes to the topography lines, but that's the main thing right there. That's kind of the first step.
Thank you. What are some red flags that indicate a land deal could become a costly mistake?
So there's some good pieces of software that can help you here. Land ID is a really good one. Super cheap. I think it's like $15 a month, maybe even less than that. But it has a lot of these filters. And so you can click on the parcel, and one of the filters is a wetland. So you can see if it has a wetland on it. Another parcel is flood zone. So you can see if it's got like a flood zone going through it. Another one is the soil maps. Now, the soil maps aren't 100% accurate, and you might need to get some testing, but the areas where you've got like the blinking red overlay, soils are probably pretty bad in that area. So the soils are important. So you can use Land ID to kind of go through the filters and see if this is something that actually is going to make you money, or if this is something that you should just avoid altogether. And there's a lot of those little filters, like our TVA lines running through it. You know, those are a big one. That's going to hinder your ability to build. No one can build under those TVA lines. You have to be a certain distance off from them. So there's a good bit of things in that list that go into whether or not you can actually build something or develop something. And again, when you take it to the city, you'll find some of these things out too. They'll kind of tell you. But those are the big ones. Obviously, if it's landlocked, that's a problem. You need to make sure you got an easement to the property to be able to do it. But it boils down to topography. Is there sewer access? Are your soils good? Those are like the three big ones. And then after you get it under contract, there's a few more things you want to do. Like, you're probably going to want to do an endangered species. Make sure there's no bald eagles in the trees that are going to get cut down. You commit a felony. You're going to want to get a geotech report that tells you if the soils are good to build on. And you're going to want to get a phase one environmental. You want to make sure it's not a toxic waste dumping site that's going to grow Godzilla lizards, you know, at some point in the future. But you don't need to do that until you have your concept plan, the city is on board with it, your builder buyer's on board with it. Now you can kind of start the more in-depth due diligence on it.
Thank you. The entitlement process for land can be intimidating. What does it involve, and why is it so critical?
Yeah, so the entitlement process is something that is not widely taught. That's one of the reasons why we started the Land Development Accelerator community, is just we didn't see somebody out there teaching it, but it really is simple. So I've already gone over the first thing you need to do and not spend a whole bunch of money on it. It's the biggest mistake I see people make, is they start spending all this engineering just to find out the city doesn't want it in the first place. So get the land under contract, get a concept plan done by a civil engineer. Take it to the city. If they're on board, take it to your buyers. If they're on board, start the process. Here's what the entitlement process looks like. The first step is getting to a preliminary plat approval. This is also called a tentative map approval. This is where the city has basically said, we have approved this development, but we're not going to give you a grading permit yet. We first need to see what the civil drawings look like and make sure they're safe. What the heck are civil drawings? Well, just like you might have a lot that you can build a home on, the city is not going to give you a building permit or give the builder a building permit until they see the architectural plans. They want to make sure the architectural plans are safe. They want to make sure that the windows are big enough for a firefighter to get into the house. They want to make sure the houses aren't too close to the power lines. So the architectural plans have to be approved by the city before they give you a permit to build the home. The civil drawings are just like the architectural plans. Builder cannot build without the architectural plans. A developer cannot develop until they have the civil drawings. And so the civil drawings show, where's the water going to go? How deep are the utilities? What's the slope of the road? Where's the road going to go? What's the grade of the land? And so you need that first. And so once you get to that preliminary plat approval, you have an approved development. The city just wants to see what the civil drawings look like. So step two is your civil engineer will create the civil drawings, and they will submit those drawings to the city's civil engineering department, and they'll go back and forth. And once those civil drawings are approved, congratulations. The next step is the city approves it, votes on it, and then once it passes, it will go up to the state. And the state is going to look at it, make sure it's safe. In Tennessee, they issue what's called a SWIP permit, SWPP, Storm Water Prevention Plan. And they want to make sure that there's not going to be flooding or anyone's going to drown or anything like that. And once you get your SWIP permit from the state, they've looked at it and said, okay, we're not going to have a stormwater problem here. Then they will give you your grading permit and you can start. So that's it. It's very, very simple. The best way to describe this, the word entitlement just means approval process. So we live in this amazing country that has these amazing neighborhoods and we have sanitary water and we've got sewer and proper drainage. I mean, it's amazing what we've built here and nobody understands why. All of these city municipalities have different departments, the fire department, the stormwater department, the public works department, the zoning department. These departments have to look at these civil drawings and make sure that they're safe. So the stormwater person's like, hey, how's the water going to run around? The public works person is going to be like, hey, what's the slope of the road? You know, and all of them, their job is to make sure that every community that comes into the city is safe and passes the approval. So, you know, I kind of mentioned it earlier. It's got to go to the fire department. Fire department's got to looking at it going, hey, is there a fire hydrant every 100 feet for the trucks to get to all the homes? Are the power lines too close to the houses? So it has to go through every single one of those departments and make sure it's safe. That's basically the entitlement process. That's how I would describe it for somebody who's kind of new to it.
Thank you. What are the biggest challenges investors face when trying to turn raw land into a housing community?
Yeah, there's two difficult things that we deal with in this business. Number one is the city. Dealing with the government's never fun. And number two are the civil engineers. They take forever and they're backed up. And I can't wait for the day where I can just click a little AI button and all of a sudden my civil drawings are done here in a few minutes. All right, I'll say, hey, I'll take a couple hours. I'll be stoked at that. But you know, the city, these are elected officials. They're not developers. They don't understand what is going on with a developer's business. They don't understand the cost. They don't understand the risk. They just think, oh, developers are making tons of money. And that is not the reality of the situation. So dealing with them is difficult. You might have uneducated city elected officials who say, no, we're not going to approve this. They're anti-development, but it's zoned for that type of development. Like they can't, they're not the god of the land. If your land is zoned, you know, R10 and you can put 100 homes on it, well, guess what? It's zoned R10, you can put 100 homes on it. They cannot tell you you can't do that. And so you have to work with them to kind of massage some of the things that they don't understand so that they can learn and understand things from all points of view. Like my biggest job as a developer is to speak to each different person and speak in terms of their interest. So I got to make the city happy. I've got to make the NIMBYs happy, the people who show up and go, not in my backyard, you know, no development. I got to make my investors happy. I got to make the neighbors and contractors happy. It's tough to do all that. But that's what you're dealing with if you're going to get into development.
Thank you. How long does a typical land development project take from purchase to completion?
So if we're just doing land entitlement in Tennessee, yes, which is important because, you know, God bless you if you're in California, it's a different world over there. I was joking about some of my problems here and some of the California guys overheard me. They're like, dude, it takes us 4 years to get approvals here. I was like, what? You know, how do you convince the seller to go under contract for 4 years until you find out? And they're like, oh, no, we don't. I was like, what do you mean you don't? He's like, well, if it falls through and we don't get the approval, we just hope we don't lose too much money. I was like, what? That is insane. So here for the entitlement process, you're looking at 15 months. So 15 months is about how long it takes. If you want to do the development where you're grading the land, putting all the roads and everything in, you know, to get that first phase done, you're looking at probably a little bit less than a year, you know, just depending on how big your first phase is. So it takes about a year to grade the land, put the roads in, the utilities, all that good stuff.
Thank you. How expensive is it to run through the land entitlement process only without actually doing the development?
Yeah, so your biggest cost is going to be your civil drawing. So here's how we handle it. You got to get to that preliminary plat approval first. So what are you going to pay for? Well, one, you need a concept plan, something that shows like what you're trying to do. And then if that goes well, Now you're going to start the process and you're going to need to do due diligence on it. So you're going to need a few things. One is an endangered species report. And it costs you a couple $1,000, maybe something cheaper than that. You're going to need a geotech report. You know, that might cost you, you know, on the low end, $4,000, on the high end, you know, $8,000. You're going to need to see to make sure the soils are good. And then you're going to need a phase one environmental, kind of same pricing as the geotech report. So to get your first one done and the due diligence, you're probably looking at $15,000, maybe $20,000. Of course, if you have a, you know, multi 400 acre, you know, community you're doing, you know, the costs are going to go up, right? So it just depends. The minimum size project we'll look at is 50 units. And once we get to the preliminary plat approval, our all-in costs are usually about $2,500 per unit. So if we're doing a 100 home community, we typically want to make $20,000 a lot. So 100 home community, $20,000 a lot. So we're talking about a $2 million exit. On that $2 million exit, we're going to spend $2,500 a unit, which is about $250,000. So that'll be the all-in cost for everything on a 100 home community. Obviously, it goes down from there. And the more units you get, like the less per unit the civil engineer charges you. And the way we pay for that is once we get to the preliminary plat approval, we've got an approved community, we've got our end buyer locked up, and we go to investors and say, hey, you know, we need $250,000 to get this approved and get it sold. You know, do you want to invest with us? So we raise capital to do the civil drawings to go through that portion.
Thank you. How can investors raise funds for these type of projects when they don't have the capital to invest in the land entitlement process?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what everybody does, right? You know, few people have this kind of money. Everybody needs to learn how to raise private capital at some point. So that if you get it to a preliminary plat approval, it doesn't cost a whole ton of money to do that. There are funds out there that invest in these type of things. There's family offices and institutions. You just got to get out there and you can Google them. Google, use your network, start making phone calls. There's tons of family offices and institutions that will invest in these types of things after you get it to that preliminary plat approval, because you kind of remove the risk at that point, right? Most of the risk. So that's an option. You know, they're going to take the majority of the lion's share if, you know, they bring the money. And so I'm a big fan of going to mom and pop investors. So like my network or accredited investors. Asking how to raise the money on something is a lot like asking, hey, so tell me how to raise kids. Well, there's a lot to go in there. So I'll kind of give you some tips, but if you want the full drawn out explanation, we actually have a free course at learnlanddevelopment.com. So the first three modules are about identifying the land, doing due diligence. The other three are like how to raise capital for your projects, because you can't teach land development without not teaching how to raise money. But if you just go down your list, let me just rewind real quick. The first thing you need to do is build your foundation. Well, what the heck is that? You need to make sure you got a website. You need to make sure that your social media handles are optimized for what you're doing. Why? Because if someone's going to give you 50, 100, 200, half a million bucks, they're going to Google you. And everyone listening to this should go and Google their name and see what pops up. I'd be willing to bet you the first thing is your LinkedIn. The second is your Instagram. And the third is probably going to be your company website if you have one. That's why you need to have those optimized. So your social media should have a big, beautiful banner that explains what you do and a link to your website. You should have a professional picture. You should have a link to some kind of lead magnet, right? We've got a free course, Get Started with Land Development. When we're raising money, we have a free ebook, 100 Questions Business Owners Ask Before Investing. So you need some kind of lead magnet that delivers value to the type of avatar that you're going towards. So your social media handles need to be optimized and looking really, really good. As soon as I click on it, I need to be able to tell your Instagram exactly what you do, who you serve, and how I can learn more. That's it. So when you click on my Instagram, it says, I teach land development and capital raising. Grab our free course. Go here. Easy peasy. People know exactly what I'm doing. I got a professional headshot, and all of my content is about land development. Same thing. When you're raising money, you need to have some past projects that you've done. Doesn't mean you have to have a land development project, but real estate in general. This is not a, let me show you how to do your first real estate deal. people getting into land development are sophisticated investors. They've done this before. They've done, they've got like a real estate business, right? It's not their first real estate transaction. And so they typically have a lot of experience with negotiations and contracts and sellers. That's all you need to do land development. You don't have to know how to do everything. You hire people that do it. So that's going to be a big part of it. You want to make sure that your social medias look really good so that when they see it, they go, oh, Brandon is somebody who I would give money to for land development because I see he does all the land development. He's got a website. Cool. That's your foundation. If you don't do that, any conversations you're having with people, you know, they're just not going to trust you, which brings me to the three pillars. In order for people to give you money, they got to know you, they got to like you, and they got to trust you. That's why starting with your network is a great way. They already know you and they already like you. You just got to get them to trust you that you know what you're doing. So what does that look like? Getting people to trust you is a process. Social proof is a great way of doing that. Showing what projects you've already done. Again, it doesn't have to be land development related because you haven't done that project yet, but just experience in real estate because people classify real estate under one big giant same umbrella. So social proof is one. Establishing yourself as an authority figure. So when you go to the doctor and they give you a prescription or they say you need to do something, they're the authority figure. Like, you don't question them. You're just like, boom, I'm going to go do it. So how do you establish yourself as an authority figure? You need to have some kind of voice in the space. This is where starting your own podcast is a great idea. If you're putting out content about a subject, people automatically assume you're an authority figure on that particular subject. So that's something else that you can do. And then once you have that built, that's your foundation. Now you're ready to start reaching out to people so that when they Google you, you actually look like somebody that they could give money to and not lose it all. So here's what you do when you're reaching out to people. You call them, you catch up with them, or you send them a text. It might sound something like this. You know, hey, Lily. Hey, this is Brandon. How are you doing? Good, good, good. How are the kids and family? Awesome. And I hadn't caught up with you in a while. Hey, I'm working on something and wanted to get your opinion. We've been doing these land development projects and they have been going fantastic. And I don't have one right now, but I'm going to have one in the future at some point. And I know that we're going to need more capital partners to do these deals with. You know, I go out, I find land deals, I pre-sell them to builders, and I go to investors, usually friends and family, and I raise the capital for the deal, and it's already pre-sold, and we split all the profits on it. Do you know anybody who might be interested in learning more about earning double-digit returns on their money secured by real estate? Again, I don't have anything right now, but I probably will in the future. If you use that script, you're going to one of three things is going to happen. One, they're going to say, I don't know anybody. Two, they're going to say, yeah, actually, I'm interested in that. Like, you know, can you tell me more about it? Or three, they'll be like, you know, actually, I do know somebody who might. And the third is what happens the most often is people are scared to call their network because they're like, I don't think they have any money. I'll tell you the most valuable thing I learned when it comes to raising money. The true value of an investor is not the money that they give you. It's the money they refer to you. Each investor that works with you will refer more money than they invest. And so when you're calling your network, you're going to get a lot of referrals. And that is huge. So that's how I would start raising money today. And again, people can grab the free content and the course on capital raising at learnlanddevelopment.com.
Thank you. How does a property investor not lose $1 million on a land deal?
Yeah, don't buy it before you get all the approvals. Like, that happened to me. So again, that was one of the reasons why we created the community was like, we could not find one out there. Like, I tried to join a community and learn all this stuff from other people, but it didn't exist. And so we kind of had to fumble around, figure it out. So there's a lot of trip hazards and wires in this business. Don't make those mistakes. We bought the land before we got all the approvals and we didn't get the approvals. And as a result, we had a big loss on it. So yeah, don't do that.
Thank you. On the flip side, you also made $1.4 million on another land deal. What made that project successful?
Yeah. So, you know, that was one of the projects where the builder came knocking on our door and wanted to build the houses themselves. So we thought we were going to build the houses and they said, hey, like, we want to build them. And so, we had the first phase that we were developing. We ended up selling it to them. And we made so much money. We're like, hey, do y'all want to do the one across the street? Like, we'll develop and sell that one to you too. And they were like, heck yeah. So that was one where we were excited. So we had pre-contracted on the second phase. before it was ever even developed and had everything pre-sold.
Thank you. Tell us where property investors can connect with you.
Yeah. So there's two people that we serve. The first is like, if you want to learn, if you're a builder looking to scale the number of homes you're building, or you are a land flipper and you're wanting to do larger, bigger land deals, or you just want to get in development, you can go to learnlanddevelopment.com. We got a free course on how to get started. If you're interested in like getting your hand held through your first deal, and being a part of a community to lean on through that first deal, you can watch the video. And if you want to book a call, you can book a call with me. We'll see if you're a fit. So that's the first. The second are the investors. These are people that don't want to learn how to do it. They like the idea of investing in pre-sold land to big national home builders like Lennar and D.R. Horton. And they want to add that to their alternative investing bucket with real estate. So if that's you, if you're trying to build a legacy, make an impact, and you like the idea of getting consistent cash flow, you can go to hbgcapital.net/waitlist. That's pronounced Harry Bob Gary capital.net/waitlist. And you can watch a video on this whole investment strategy, and you can book a call with us, you know, if you want to learn more. If you want our free ebook and you're an investor, just go to hbgcapital.net. So that's it. And no wait list on the end of it, just hbgcapital.net. We've got our free ebook, 100 Questions Business Owners Ask Before Investing. And it's designed to give you the questions you should ask before making investments, because I'm a big believer that questions unlock the answers we need to make more informed investment decisions. So if you ask the right questions, you won't lose money. And then, of course, we've got our podcast, Recession Resistant Real Estate Radio. You can learn more about that kind of stuff there.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.